We're starting a brand new series this morning that I'm really excited about. We're calling it Dealing with Your Feelings. We're going to talk about the thing that we all like to talk about, right? Our feelings. That's always so much fun. But I think we can always kind of group people into one of two categories when it comes to this idea of feelings, generally speaking. There are the stuffers and there are the gushers, right? How many stuffers do we have in this room? Okay, my peeps? Yeah. I would ask the gushers to raise their hand, but I'm not going to do that. How about everyone who's a gusher just start crying? Because I know you can do that on command. Just let it out right now. I know it's always just underneath the surface. But what's interesting is stuffers usually end up marrying the gushers, right? Isn't that a weird kind of thing? How many of you did that? How many of you guys married the opposite, right? Isn't that fun? No, my wife cries and I just kind of watch her cry. That's just kind of how our relationship works. But I'm sure it's messing up our children pretty good by being one of each. But the whole reason we're doing this series, because if you know me, I am a gusher. Or I'm not a gusher. I am a stuffer. I am someone who is prides himself or has in the past prided himself on being someone who is not very emotional. And one of the reasons we're doing this series is because I've been working with Justin Gravett, who's been our Navigators partner, who's helping us in our disciple-making efforts here and changing the culture of our church. And part of his responsibility is to meet with the senior leadership and begin a discipleship kind of relationship with the senior pastor. And so for the last 3 years, him and I have been meeting together basically every other week at Panera. And through that time, he's been kind of working with me on all kinds of things in my own life. And we got to this idea of feelings, and he would ask me, like, you know, so how are you feeling? And I could never really answer that question very well. And so he just started asking me the question, well, tell me, or, you know, what were some of the feelings that you have felt over this past week? And for me, I was like, I got nothing, dink, 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 you know, kind of thing. And it was very, very hard for me to ever express or ever communicate my feelings. And so after a couple weeks of that, he brought a piece of paper to the next meeting. He slid the piece of paper across the table at Panera, and I started looking at it, and here it was a diagram, and here was the diagram on this piece of paper. It is known as the feelings wheel. Anybody know the feelings wheel? If you're in the counseling set, you know? Okay. So a feelings wheel is a wheel of just feelings, basically. And there was core 7 feelings in the center of it, like, you know, happy or sad or disgusted, angry, fearful. And then it begins to work its way out and it gets a little bit more specific. And so he said to me, I want you to point to the feelings that you have felt over the last week using the feelings wheel. Well, I felt like a 5-year-old in elementary school going, I don't know. But I still, even with the feelings wheel in front of me, I still had a very hard time pointing out any sort of feelings that I actually felt or admitted to. And so, you know, that was a problem. And so then, as any good counselor knows to do, right, if you're kind of stuck, I was kind of stuck in this kind of like, I just don't know. See, if you can't move forward in counseling, what do you need to do? You just start working your way backwards, right? That's just good counseling practice. So he started, you know, digging into my past, and you guys know some of my past. My parents were wonderful parents, lovely parents, great parents, a lot of great childhood memories. But one of the things my parents were kind of not so great at was with their emotions. Both my mom and my dad were very kind of stoic in nature. My dad is a Marine, because once you're a Marine, you're always a Marine. So he is a Marine, and he was a fireman. And so he just grew up in a household and grew up in a culture, and he just did not express very many emotions at all. In fact, we got out our old video cassette tapes, our VHS tapes, and watched some of the old Christmas movies recently. And it wasn't just Christmas, it was just a lot of different stuff. But at Christmas time, at birthday parties, I just noticed my father would be sitting there like stone-faced the whole time. And I'm going, Dad, what was wrong with you, man? He's like, I don't know. You know, just, and I'm like, I'm turning into my father, I think, a little bit with that. But he was just very stoic. And so we kind of dug into that. And so I just grew up in a very stoic kind of home where we didn't express a lot of emotion. But more importantly, he kept digging into my past, and I realized that there was one emotion that I did see from my parents quite a bit throughout the years, and that was anger. And as I've shared before, my parents, as good parents they were, they fought often. They fought in front of us. They fought, you know, and they said things and did things that were very hurtful and ugly. And as a child, having to hear those kind of things being said back and forth, not to us ever, but back and forth at them, it was just so hard to hear. And it was just so ugly. And I just wanted to cover my ears in my room. And I, you know, it was just very hard. And I made a vow, you know, when you get hurt, sometimes you make a vow to yourself, like, I'm never going to get hurt this way again. I'm never going to have to deal with this again. And so I made a vow for myself never to get angry like that. I was just not going to get angry. I was refusing my, you know, I would just refuse to ever allow me, you know, myself to get that kind of emotion out. I just said, I'm never going to do that. And so I made a vow not to get angry, but something else happened in that time, I think, that we kind of, discovered together, is that I kind of put together this idea that emotions equaled anger. Because the only really emotion that I saw from my parents consistently was that kind of emotion, was anger. And so I made a connection that emotions were synonymous with anger. And so when Justin and I were talking about emotions, I actually said these words to him, emotions are bad. I'm like, that sounds like one word away from Frankenstein's monster. Emotions, bad, you know, fire, bad. I actually said this, emotions are bad. And he's going, bad? You know, no, they're not bad. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, how are they good? You know, because in my mind, only thing that I could think of emotionally, if I was going to be emotional, that meant I was going to be angry. That was the only connection I made with emotions. It was going to be angry. And so I had that growing up. And so that was part of the whole messed up world that I, you know, in my mind and my heart. But also, I kind of gravitated towards the teaching that, you know, you can't trust your emotions. How many people have ever heard that? You know, you can't trust your emotions. Emotions aren't really a reflection of reality. And so emotions are just kind of things that can lead you down the wrong path. And I had a senior pastor who was also very stoic. He was warm, but he was very stoic. He didn't have high highs. He didn't have low lows. And he was a constant in my life. And he was a really great pastor. I saw other pastors who were emotional, who had high highs and low lows, and they were the ones who were getting in trouble. They were the ones who had moral failings. They were the ones who allowed their emotions to get the best of them. And so I said to myself, you know, I don't want to be that way. I want to be kind of stoic. I want to have a kind of a good ministry where you can come to me and I can be a rock and I don't have to be emotional and all those kinds of things. And so he kind of called me out on this. By the way, you didn't know I was so messed up, did you? As a pastor, you didn't know you were getting yourself into coming here. But he kind of, you know, basically kind of called me out on this and said, listen, Dave, you know, you can't keep doing this. You know, if you're going to have any sort of effective ministry, if you're going to be able to be a good dad, a good husband, you can't just be this, you know, tin robot, dink, 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 all your life. You got to be emotional. You got to have emotions. And so thus began the process of me starting to deal with my feelings. And one of the things, and I don't know if you guys can relate with that, right? I know some of you can maybe say, you know what, I kind of had a similar experience, I kind of a similar view. Most, you know, many guys, I think, tend to be stuffers with that. But here's the reality. Our emotional condition is much easier to hide, ignore, and dismiss than our physical condition, isn't it? I mean, for many of us, especially dudes, you know, this is something, if someone cuts us or if we get cut, there's blood, there's, you know, evidence, there's some sort of outward physical wound that we see and have to deal with. But when someone hurts you or cuts you, inside of you, it is so much easier to hide. You can still go to work the next day. You can still parent. You can still do the things that you normally do. And it's easy just to kind of hide the wounds inside of us, to hide the emotions inside of what's going on. Not anything like a physical condition. But just like a physical condition, there are symptoms that eventually begin to show themselves when you are emotionally unhealthy, when you got a lot of stuff going on inside that you haven't dealt with. And here's some symptoms of some emotional unhealthiness, right? One is you're quick to blame and criticize others, right? If you find yourself constantly or consistently pointing the finger at somebody else. Chances are maybe there's some emotional unhealthiness going on in your life. If you're desperately seeking or avoiding the spotlight, that's another cue that chances are if you got to run out in the spotlight and got to be the center of attention all the time, chances are there's something inside of you going, I need to find that kind of fame. I need to find that attention to fill something inside of you. Or if you're desperately avoiding the spotlight and that if the spotlight ever gets onto you, you kind of just want to cringe up and hide in the corner, that doesn't sound very healthy either. And so that's a cue maybe something's going on inside of you. If you hold grudges, if it's hard for you to forgive, if you can just remember everything that that person said or did to you like from 10 years past because you just never let go of that, chances are there's still stuff that's going on inside. If you find yourself indecisive, like you can't make a decision because you have these feelings that you just can't work through, and you have one feeling telling you this way and one feeling you telling this way, and you just can't work through these and you're just kind of stuck, chances are there's some stuff going on. If you're denial about the past, meaning if you think that your past has nothing to do with how you handle your feelings today in the present, chances are you still got some things to work on in the past. If you find yourself being a people pleaser, that is a cue. Or, and I say it this way, if you find yourself at odds with God, meaning I've never met anybody who believes in God, but yet is either angry at God or hasn't forgiven God or blames God, and I've never found anybody like that and also emotionally healthy. There's always a disconnect. I've never found anybody with those two things. Usually there's some emotional unhealthiness if you're at odds with God. And so there's just some symptoms, but there's always the same result with all of these, that emotionally unhealthy people struggle to have emotionally healthy relationships, that you can't have it both ways. You can't be emotionally unhealthy. You can't be a stuffer or even a gusher and just have really good emotional, intimate, effective relationships. It just doesn't work. You got to have both. It's a both and. And so some of you are going, well, you know what? I don't really care about having emotionally healthy relationships. See, I had relationships, and they've hurt me, they've wounded me, and so I'd rather just kind of go at it on my own, and I know if I get into more relationships, I'm just going to be more hurt, more wounded, more feelings, more emotions, and it's just, I don't want that. Well, you can do that. You can do that for the rest of your life, but it's going to be a lonely life. It's going to be an ineffective life, right? And chances are, my guess is deep down inside, you don't want to be lonely for the rest of your life. Chances are you do want to have deep, meaningful relationships and friendships with others and with your spouse and with your kids. I mean, I don't think anybody would say, no, I really don't want that. Ideally, I think we do. I just think it's harder as we get older, right? Isn't it weird? Like in high school and college even, it was so much easier to make friends. It was so much easier to maintain friends. It just didn't seem that hard. But now as adults in your late 20s, your 30s, your 40s, isn't it making friends and having friends and keeping friends, isn't that harder? Isn't it more like complicated? And it's so easy for us to say, well, you know what? I would be friends with that person, but they're just too weird, right? Or they're just too needy, or they're just too whatever. And we tend to blame the other person for not really becoming that close with them, right? It's just easy to do that. But ultimately, it's not really their issue. I mean, you know, people were just as needy and whatever when they were in their teens or in their 20s, but now all of a sudden, it's us. There's some stuff going on inside of us. Chances are that we haven't dealt with that it's keeping us from having intimate, close relationships with, again, not just friends, but with our spouses and even our kids. I'll tell you a quick story. Because this is so new with me, this is so fresh. This was just last week. My son, one of my sons, did something funny. And I just started laughing kind of out loud. And in all seriousness, he stopped. And he said, so that's what your laugh sounds like. You could just feel my heart just break. I'm going, oh my goodness, I am turning into my father more than I ever thought I would. And I'm like, I don't want that. I don't want my sons to think that I never laugh or never even heard. I mean, really? Now, I've laughed before in front of them. I'm sure I have. But just that, what is he communicating? I'm like, I'm just like, man, that is not a healthy relationship that I have with my son if he's saying those kind of things to me when I laugh. Ouch. So I'm on this journey, and here's what I'm learning. And before we get in our text this morning, just a few things about emotions. Emotions are actually a gift from God. God is an emotional God. God has all kinds of emotions. You know, he's angry, he rejoices, he even laughs, you know. And as being image bearers of God, God has gifted us, part of the thumbprint of God on our lives, he's gifted us with this idea of emotions, that emotions are not all bad. Yeah, emotions can take us to places and, you know, and lead us to doing things that are sinful, but emotions are bad. He's given us emotions to experience, to enjoy. And so it's not a bad thing. It's a gift from God. So guys who see emotions are a bad or a weakness, no, they're a gift, and we got to be able to recognize that. Here's another thing. Emotions are gauges, not guides. Emotions are gauges, not guides. Emotions are something that should indicate and tell us what's going on inside of us, but they don't have to be guides. And this was something that I really wrestled with because of my vow never to be angry, right? I would never say or never express, and this is why I had a hard time pointing to the feelings wheel, I would never say I was angry, because if I admitted a feeling like anger, for instance, if I admitted that I was actually feeling angry, in my mind, I was letting anger win. I was basically saying, you know, anger's got the best of me, anger's got, you know, won out, and I didn't want to admit that I was angry, because I thought if I admitted it, then it means that I've lost and anger has won, and that's not the case, really. For example, anger is simply a thing that's going on inside of your heart, a warning light saying you have perceived some sort of injustice, whether to yourself or to someone else, and you need to deal with that. You need to figure out, is that real, is that legitimate, and what are you going to do about it? But having anger is not, just having it or acknowledging doesn't mean that it's won. Now, some people, especially I would say more on the gusher side of things, they allow their emotions to get the best of them. They allow them to lead them to places where they do not need to go, but they're not necessarily supposed to be guides. They're just gauges just to tell you, here's what's going on inside of you. And here's the biggest one that, you know, I've been working through. Emotional health is necessary, and this is why we're doing this series. Emotional health is necessary for spiritual growth. Emotional health is necessary for spiritual growth. And when you think about spiritual growth, when you think about your faith and growing your faith and becoming more like Jesus, we often tend to focus on, you know, and rightfully so, loving God first, right? We start focusing on looking upward. When we think about what does it take for me to grow spiritually, our first indication is to look upward and think about, well, yeah, first of all, first command, love God with all of our heart, soul, and mind, and strength. Yes, we got to do that. And then after that, we often think about what's the second greatest command that's like it? Love others, right? And so we start thinking about, okay, spiritual growth means loving outward, loving others, and what does it mean to serve others and one another kind of thing. But when Jesus talked about spiritual growth, when he talked about what it means to be a disciple, when he talked about having good health all the way around, I think he also pointed us oftentimes in Scripture, not just to look upward, not just to look outward, but to look inward. He often expressed this point that out of your heart, right, the mouth speaks, that it's what comes out of your heart that makes you unclean. It's the condition of your heart that matters most. And I think there's a disconnect in our churches today, and you know, this idea that I can be spiritual, I can love God and love others, and yet I don't really have to look inward very often. I don't have to deal with the stuff inward as long as I can just, you know, love God and love others. But there's a connection there. You really can't love God well, you can't really love others well if you haven't dealt with your emotional issues, if you're still emotionally immature or unhealthy. It's just there's this disconnect if you think that's going to happen. And so what I want to do this morning is just kind of kick off our series. I want to look at something that Jesus said. So if you have your Bibles, turn with me to Matthew chapter 7. This passage is really a very famous thing. It's part of the Sermon on the Mount of what he said. So chances are when I start reading it, you're going to go, I know what exactly where Jesus is going here. I've heard this before. Some of you have it memorized. And let me just say the context is really about judging. But I think what Jesus is saying, the principle here, really can be applied to what we're talking about as well today. So Matthew chapter 7, Jesus basically asks, I think, a really great question as we kick off our series. Here's what he says. He says, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? He says, I've just noticed something, the tendency that most of you, if not all of you, tend to have. Most of you tend to want to look at and point out and focus on really seemingly insignificant things in other people while you really neglect the bigger issues in your own life and in your own heart. I just tend to notice that. He's like, why do you do that? And I think whether if Jesus is talking to Jewish people 2,000 years ago or, you know, us today, I think that, you know, I think it's the same thing. I think this is something that we all tend to do, right? We all tend to want to focus on other people's issues, other people's problems, other people's messes of life, and we tend to not want to even think about or wrestle with what's really going on inside of us. I think it's just like, you know, like the whole idea of the spotlight is much better if it's on other people, if it's on us. It's like, let's get the spotlight off of us as soon as possible. Ignore the man behind the curtain kind of thing. Let's focus on other people. And the question is, well, why is that? He asked the question, why do you look at the speck in your, you know, brother's eye and all the while you're ignoring the big plank in your own eye? And then why do we do that? What's the answer? Because it's way more fun pointing out other people's issues. Let's be honest, isn't it? Believe me, I do this every week up here. This is so much more fun pointing out your guys' problems and not deal with my own issues. Let's just be honest about this. It is so much easier to say, can you believe what she did? Can you believe how they handled that parenting situation? Did you hear him? Did you see her? I mean, it is so much more fun. I mean, Jerry Springer has made millions and millions of dollars putting a train wreck every week on TV for everybody to ignore their own issues, to point out the problems that they see on TV. I mean, it's just so much more fun pointing out other people. And so we neglect, he's basically saying, you guys have neglected the issues going on in your own lives. And here's the thing, what happens when we do that? See, untreated wounds only get harder to treat. Untreated wounds get bigger. They begin to fester, right? See, we heard the phrase, finish this phrase, time heals all wounds. That's not true. Time heals all treated wounds, right? We all know a wound that goes untreated will stay untreated and will get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and get harder to treat. Some of you are nurses, some of you are doctors, and you think patients come in. If you would only have, you know, come in 2 weeks earlier, a month earlier, how much more easier this would have been to treat. This would have just taken a little bit of medication, a Band-Aid, but now you've waited, now you've let it grow, now you've let it get kind of infected, and now it has spread and is so much harder to deal with. And Jesus says, listen, some of you maybe have started with a speck in your eye, but you've like ignored it. You've been poking around other people's lives, and now it's become a 2x4, and you have found yourself bumping into it over and over and over again with certain issues. He says, why do you do that? That's just silly, guys. And then he asks another question. He says, how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye when all the time there is a plank in their own eye, in your own eye? I mean, how do you think you're in any sort of position to do this? And Jesus, again, I think he rightfully points out a tendency in all of us is to want to help somebody else out. I don't think Jesus is saying that's a bad thing, but our tendency is to not focus on our own issues, but to go play Dr. Phil with somebody else's issues, right? It's just, again, it's so much easier. It's more fun. Here's what I would do if I were you. You know, I don't have to do it myself, but it's good. I'll just give advice. Everyone's got advice. Everyone's got something that you can help with. It's just easier to do that. He says, what do you think, how in the world do you think you are in any sort of position to really help anybody else out when you are, you know, just blatantly missing the plank in your own eye? I mean, you're just no position to do that. And I'll tell you, you know, as parents, your sons and daughters, as they get older, and you probably know this already by now, they're going to have issues that you're going to need to help them with. But if you haven't dealt with your own issues first, it is so much more difficult trying to help them. You're just in no real position to do that. Wives and husbands, I know you want to help out your spouse, but if you haven't taken care of your own stuff first, you're in no real position to help them. So you can't care for others if you don't care for yourself. He's like, you got this blank in your eye. It's clear, it's obvious, and you're doing nothing about it, and yet you want to go out and help the world. Well, that's great if you want to help the world, but you're just no position to do that at this moment. And then he just gets real kind of harsh with them. He says, you hypocrite. It's like, ouch. He's like, well, what else do you call yourself? I mean, you're pretending like nothing's going on in your own life and you can go out and play Oprah and Dr. Phil with so many other people, but you got this issue going on. He says, you hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Again, he's not condemning the idea of wanting to help people, but he's saying, listen, you got to put this in order. First, deal with your own stuff. Deal with your own feelings. Deal with your own emotions. Deal with your own baggage. Deal with your own wounds. Deal with your own past before you think you can be in any sort of position to help others. And so Justin really kind of called me out on this one. And he didn't use this verse or these verses, but this was his point. He's saying, Dave, listen, you're the pastor, right? And you're a father and you're a husband. How in the world do you think you're going to ever be able to help, you know, and have good, healthy relationships if you're constantly keeping people like this because you don't want anybody to see your emotions or express emotions or deal with your emotions? He says, you're going to be so ineffective as a disciple maker. You're only going to go like this far as a pastor, you know, as far as being able to help people. And I want to help people. And I know you guys want to help other people. I know we want to have people who are emotionally hurting and whatever come into our church and find help and find healing. But how in the world are we ever going to do this if we don't deal with our own stuff first? And besides all of that, you know, the whole idea of being disciple is wanting to become more like Jesus and loving people the way Jesus loved us. And he called me out on this, you know, basically too. It's like, you're never going to be able to love people well. You're never going to be able to be like that if you don't acknowledge what is going on inside of you. And the bottom line is, if you don't deal with your emotions will end up dealing with you, right? Eventually, that'll happen. Eventually, your son's going to come up to you and say, oh, that's what your laugh sounds like. So as we start this series, I just wanted to throw out some questions for you, some self-reflecting questions to look at the plank maybe in your own eye. Here's the first question. This is something that I rewarded so that you can ask yourself this. How has my past experiences shaped the way I deal with my present feelings? I really want you to spend time this week thinking about this. How has my past shaped my present? And ultimately, perhaps, will impact my future. But how has that impacted the way I handle emotions? Second question, what feelings cause me the most trouble? What feelings get the best of me? What feelings continue to rob me of other feelings like joy and peace and thankfulness? What are the feelings that continue to haunt me over and over and over again that I just can't shake? Next question is this. How do I handle, and I put these in all in C's so you can remember these better. How do I handle conflict? Right? Do I get defensive real easily? Do I get offensive real easily when I start butting heads with somebody? Is it go time? Is the game on? War's on, you know, kind of thing. Do I get super defensive? Do I pull back? Do I put the walls up? How do I handle conflict? How do I handle change? I'm afraid of change. Do I want to shut down? Do I, you know, what do I do with change? How do I handle commands? Do when people tell me what to do, am I submissive? Does, when my boss tells me what to do, do I want to just go and rage and say no way? And you know, do I resist authority? Do I fight back? You know, what's going on inside of you when it comes to when someone tells you what to do? How dare you tell me what to do? Don't you know who I am? Kind of thing. What about criticisms? If someone says something to you in a critical way, does that crush you? Do you carry it with you for days and days and days? Like you just can't let it go? Here's the other one. This is for me. How do you handle compliments? You know? I think that's telling about how our emotional state is going on inside. When someone gives me a compliment, I just want to go, no, you know, and just, see, you know, here's all the things I did wrong. Instead of just saying thank you, which is healthy and normal, I want to go, you know, I just want to go, no, there's something going on with that. And the other one is this, and this was for me too. How do I handle compassion? I was struggling, and I still struggle, with this whole idea of empathy. When my wife cries, I just sit there, right? And if you've counseled with me, you know, chances are, if you sat there and cried, I sat there and watched you cry, handed you a Kleenex. And that's not good. I don't think that's good. I think it's more healthier to be able to cry with somebody, to be compassionate, to have empathy. And that's something I'm working on. But that's hard for me. So how do I handle those things? And last question, I just want to ask you this to think about. The same question Justin asked me. What emotions did I feel this past week, and how did I respond? Can you actually identify and think about the emotions that you have felt? Have you thought even about those things? Or have you just kind of go, I'll just dismiss it? And how did you respond? Again, guys, I think we all want to grow spiritually. I think we all, you know, here are looking, you know, at least at looking for God or to God and want a relationship with God and be able to enjoy him and love others well. But it's not just looking upward or outward. It's got to be, you know, some time looking inward. I'm going to invite Seth to come up. We're going to sing a song that has been meaningful for me. It's really a song about God's perfect love, right? Because when we get to the point of acknowledging our emotions, who do we acknowledge it to? I don't think we need to just acknowledge it to ourselves. I think we need it to bring to God with, you know, what we're feeling, what we're dealing with. And God's love is perfect. God's love is inviting. But I do understand this is painful for some of you. This is going to be a painful process. And as he gets ready, I just want to finish with just some words from one of my favorite authors, C.S. Lewis. In his book, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, if you've seen the movie, the boy Eustace, the cousin Eustace, is really kind of a brat. He's very selfish. In the movie, he ends up becoming a dragon as a result. But at the end of the movie, he doesn't want to stay a dragon. He wants to become a boy again. And so he retells the story to his cousins of how he was changed back. And he says that Aslan, who is Jesus in the book, really, comes to him and takes him to this pool to bathe. And he says, get into the pool. Well, Eustace is this dragon, big scales, and he realizes, I just can't get in, I got to get this dragon stuff off, but I can't. But then he realizes he's a dragon, which means he's kind of like a snake. He can peel his skin off. And so he rips his stuff off of him. He, you know, gets all the scales off, and he puts his foot in the water only to realize he's still a dragon. And so he rips the other layer off, and he rips it off, and he puts it aside, and he steps in again, and only to realize again, he's still the dragon, there's still scales and all that on him. And finally, Aslan says this, He says, you will have to let me undress you. And here's Eustace replies. Here's how he says. He says, I was afraid of his claws, I can tell you, but I was pretty nearly desperate now. So I just lay flat down on my back and let him do it. The very first tear he made was so deep that I thought it was gone right into my heart. And when he began to pull the skin off, it hurt worse than anything I've ever felt. And while he peeled the beastly stuff right off, just as I thought I'd done myself the other three times, but only they hadn't hurt. And there it was, lying on the grass, ever so much thicker and darker and more knobbly looking than the others had been. And there was I, smooth and soft. And then he caught hold of me, and he threw me into the water. It smarted like anything, but only for a moment. And after that, it was perfectly delicious. As I started swimming and splashing, I found that all the pain had gone from my arm. And then I saw why. I had turned into a boy again. After a bit, the lion took me out and dressed me with his paws in these new clothes, he says, I'm wearing. See, what do you do with your feelings? As we're going to discover through the series, is ultimately we got to take them to God to deal with. And for some of you, that's really hard. We're going to work through that, hopefully together. But God has loved us so perfectly that I think it's safe to do. And it might hurt at first, but in the end, he wants to clothe you in new clothes and help you become like that boy, that girl again, feeling soft and smooth.